Welcome to Government Policy Unpacked, the podcast for proactive citizens where we break down the most pressing government policy issues so you can finally understand what's going on, be a part of the solution, and hold your government leaders accountable. Hey, I'm Rupesh Patel. Thanks for joining me. Donald Trump, whether you like it or not, is officially the President of the United States. In today's episode, you will learn about the executive orders Trump has signed and plans to sign that you should probably care about. By the end of this episode, you'll learn what an executive order is and isn't, and a brief breakdown of the ones that are most likely to impact your life and the people around you. Let's unpack this. What did you all think of President Trump's inaugural address? Definitely wasn't the typical inaugural address that we have become accustomed to, but he definitely heard his priorities. It kind of felt like a State of a Union or even like a convention speech. I'm really curious what you thought, so if you leave some comments, that would be great. I suspect many of the things he plans to do in his term will be done through executive orders. And you probably have already heard some executive orders that have been signed or are going to be signed. This isn't unusual, as any new president is keen to shake things up, and executive orders are really a quick way of doing so. There are some famous executive orders that you probably have heard before, including creating the Manhattan Project, which ultimately led to the first atomic bomb, the creation of the Department of Homeland Security in response to 9/11, and probably the most consequential executive orders was made by Abraham Lincoln through the Emancipation Proclamation, where Lincoln declared that enslaved people shall be free, ultimately leading to the abolishment of slavery in America. So executive orders can be powerful. Let me take a bit of time to explain what an executive order is and isn't. So executive orders are directives issued by the president to the federal government. They hold the force of law, but do not require approval from Congress, so the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. That last point is key because it's hard to pass anything through Congress these days. And so if a president can use an executive order, then it can really speed up progress towards their agenda. There are limits to the power of an executive order, though. For example, an executive order cannot contradict existing laws passed by Congress, and its legality can be challenged in court. In the last Trump presidency, he issued as many executive orders as some presidents did over two terms. Trump definitely depended more on executive orders to pursue his agenda than going through Congress. The advantage of passing something through Congress is that it's much harder to change in the future. Think about Obamacare. Obamacare was passed via the Affordable Care Act, so Trump couldn't unilaterally repeal it when he became president in 2017. And ultimately, Congress didn't want to repeal it either. So Obamacare is still in place today. If he wants to repeal that at some point, he's going to have to get Congress to change it. Whereas a president could easily get rid of another president's executive orders. When Trump left office, Joe Biden did this to Trump. And now that Trump is in office, Trump has done that to Biden. So they can easily be changed and removed compared to anything that passes through Congress. Okay, so which executive orders, Trump executive orders that he's just signed, should you care about? The ones I'm going to focus on are not those kind of proclamations or ones that are cultural in nature, such as the changing of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, or renaming Mount Denali back to Mount McKinley after a former U.S. president. So I'm not going to focus on those ones, but I will say that Trump did signal in his inaugural address that he has a bit of a reverence for the 25th president, William McKinley. So I encourage you to take a look at McKinley's presidency because it's kind of eerily similar. He, or at least reflects what Trump says he might want to do. So McKinley's presidency, he expanded American territory into Hawaii, Puerto Rico, and he was also a fan of tariffs. He used them quite a bit. So yeah, definitely some similarities there. Let's start with the tariffs and executive orders around that. Broadly said that his administration will do a review of its trade relationships by April 1st and then kind of go from there. Specifically on Canada and Mexico, there were no executive orders to officially place tariffs on those two countries, but he signaled that they may be coming as soon as February 1st. It's anybody's guess at this point as to if and when tariffs would be put in place in America's neighbors. The rhetoric from Donald Trump is definitely there as far as what he's saying towards Canada and feeling like he doesn't need Canadian goods and, you know, just his desire to feel like they're not getting ripped off anymore. Anyway, I did a whole episode on that. Definitely encourage you to take a listen. Broad tariffs in general will create a trade war. If the U.S. applies trade tariffs on Canada, Canada will probably retaliate, and that's going to hurt the pocketbooks if you live anywhere in North America. So yeah, definitely encourage you to take a listen to those first two episodes that I had. They were all about the Trump tariffs. One executive order that got signed by Trump that isn't getting a whole lot of attention, but I think you need to care about, is the withdrawal of the U.S. from the WHO, or the World Health Organization. We don't know if the president can actually unilaterally do this, because Congress was the one that got the U.S. into the World Health Organization in the first place, so there could be legal challenges. But the significance of the U.S. not being a part of the WHO is that there's reduced funding and involvement of the U.S., and that could really reduce the WHO's efforts to track and prevent disease outbreaks around the world. And often the WHO is able to contain diseases in other parts of the world before it shows up in the U.S., and this could be compromised. The U.S. is also able to access a lot of valuable data to help its response, and this could be an issue too. There is criticism of the WHO, so it's not without its own problems. There's criticism about how inefficient the organization is, but I feel like there are probably better ways to make those changes than to just completely pull out of the whole thing. Then there's birthright citizenship. Opponents of birthright citizenship, they exist because of something people call birthing tourism. Birthright citizenship essentially grants U.S. citizenship to anyone born on U.S. soil, even if their parents are in America illegally. The argument against birthright citizenship is that it incentivizes people to come to America so that they can have their child there, and that child would be a U.S. citizen. Trump wants to do away with this, and he signed an executive order doing just that. There are several consequences from ending birthright citizenship. The first is maybe less about the specific person, but it's because it's enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. And so if you just get rid of it through an executive order, that really sets a precedent of removing other constitutional protections. So in the future, they can be removed by the stroke of a president's pen. The executive order, interestingly, was just temporarily blocked by a district court judge. Otherwise, it would have taken effect sometime in mid-February, and that change, if it does ultimately move forward, will create stateless children, meaning there's no country associated with that child. And so they'll have a hard time getting proper documents, accessing education, and other services. Trump has also said that America is the only country that has birthright citizenship, and that's just not true. So does Canada, and I think there's like 20 or 30 other countries. So definitely not the only country to do that. This is false. The other executive order is around the Paris Climate Agreement. So this landmark Paris Climate Agreement binds together over 200 countries to ensure that global temperatures do not exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. The U.S. under Barack Obama played a key leadership role in bringing other major powers to sign on. And in 2017, then-President Donald Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement. It was his first thing that he did, or one of the first executive orders. In 2021, Joe Biden, one of his first executive orders was to put the U.S. back in. And well, you can guess what happened again. Trump pulled the U.S. out as one of his first executive orders. Now, when the last time this happened, it's not that the world just stopped pursuing climate action, But with the U.S., without the U.S. at the table, climate financing got diminished, and other countries like China and India stepped into that leadership vacuum. And just the U.S. doesn't have as much of a say on sort of the climate action or that sort of, you know, green, clean economy going forward. Within the U.S., cities and certain states did step up, though, due to the lack of leadership at the federal level, and I imagine we'll probably see the same thing happen again. The thing is that every year counts, right? And it's unfortunate that for the next 4 years, the U.S. government under Trump just won't be prioritizing climate action at all. Finally, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the executive order that Trump signed that aims to, and I quote, the name of the executive order is Defend Women from Gender Ideology, Extremism, and Restoring Biological Truth to the Federal Government. The order essentially focuses on the biological sex of a person to be just male and female, and it's critical of the use of gender, the term gender. I encourage you to read the details of the order because there are lots of things in there and it can be found at the whitehouse.gov website. But it ranges from limiting documentation to just the biological sexes of male and female, removing communications from government websites and programs that speak to gender fluidity, and limiting funding for any programs that support gender rather than biological sex. I'm definitely concerned for folks from the LGBTQ2+ community who are feeling vulnerable already. They're already marginalized, they're going to be further marginalized, and are probably likely not feeling protected by their own government. I think this executive order could be legitimizing additional hate to this community when they don't need it, and it could be emboldening other people to take action into their own hands. And yeah, so I think it was worth definitely informing you folks on this one, because if you care about people who are in marginalized communities, this is definitely one that probably is going to affect folks. One of the biggest question marks to me, though, out of the executive orders they signed is about the Mexican border and how far is he willing to go with deportations. Will families be split up? He says he intends to just focus on criminals first, but then what? I think that he was in an interview on NBC and he said he really doesn't want to split up families. And I sure hope that that's not the case. Also, what will the impact on farmers be given the number of undocumented workers that pick their fruits and vegetables, work their slaughterhouses, and attend to their dairy cows? What's that going to be? Last time, farmers were impacted by the tariffs. They probably will be impacted by tariffs again. And now, if they're losing a lot of their workers, even though it's illegal to hire undocumented workers, it happens. I imagine the agriculture industry is going to get hit. This was Trump's biggest campaign promise, so I imagine we'll get clarity on all these answers soon. Overall, I think you can expect Trump to use executive orders, and that will become even more of a thing if he can't get his agenda passed through Congress. He has a Republican-led Congress, so it is very possible that some of these ideas that he has that he typically uses through executive orders, maybe he's able to get passed through Congress. He's got a bit of a window because then the midterms show up. So there is a possibility that he's able to pass maybe more legislation this time than he did last time. He did have a Republican, I believe he had a Republican majority the first time, but there were a lot of Republicans who were questioning Trump. And this time around, most Republicans, I think like 90%+ of Republicans who are in Congress, are totally in support of Trump. So it might be a different time, and he probably, you know, will get some things passed through Congress this time. But I think the use of executive orders suits him well. He can take credit for it. It's easy. He can make a show of it, which he did with some of the first ones he signed. He signed them in front of a big arena, so he has a little bit more control over that. But just for your own understanding, ultimately, if you want lasting change, passing laws is the way to go, as they are much harder to repeal. I hope this breakdown of these early Trump executive orders was helpful. I encourage you to continue to pay attention, stay attuned to what's happening, And just thanks for joining me on another episode of Government Policy Unpacked. Please subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, stay engaged, keep informed, and let's hold our leaders accountable. Cheers.